Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Event Innovator Show, where we interview people in all facets of events who are making a difference in the world through events, making them unforgettable, and today is no different. We're with Gabriella Rabuccio. Yes, that's Rabuccio, like it's Italian, and she runs a company called Pro Event Tips. But one interesting thing about her is her very first event, it was part of the 2014 World Cup down in Brazil. She worked for ESPN for 12 years, and that was her very first assignment, thrown into the fire. And she is also a half marathon and marathon runner. She has, if you can see this, she has a lot of medals behind her, and she just loves to run. So welcome to the show, Gabby.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm glad we were finally able to connect. I've been looking forward to it.
So tell us the quick story. How did you get assigned to the World Cup? I mean, that's pretty incredible. And how did you get into events maybe even before that?
Well, I think my getting into event story is similar to most event professionals, where it happened by accident. So I worked at ESPN for 12 years, but my first 4 years there, I was in the technology space. So it was my dream to work at ESPN. I saw myself on the sidelines of the NFL, which is embarrassing to say out loud now, but like that was my dream when I was a little girl. I was very fortunate that I went to college at UConn, made some contacts in Connecticut, you know, because ESPN is in stores, and was able to get a job, foot in the door in the tech room. Then about 3 or 4 years after doing that, one of my friends was like, "Gabby, you're always planning the holidays that we do. You are always planning our vacations. You plan all the get-togethers." They're like, "You know, there's a job for that here, right?" And I was like, "Tell me more." So it was one of my really good friends, Roy Stickerson. He worked on Baseball Tonight. And he was like, "We have an event manager or production manager who literally does all the logistics." And I was like, I want that. Why can't I do that?" So I interviewed, spent a lot of time shadowing and stuff, and was very fortunate to get assigned to soccer as soon as I got the job. I grew up playing soccer. I love the Italian national team. World Cups were always a big thing for us. So I thought I had hit the jackpot. And then I started in 2012, and they were like, "Okay, you're assigned to the World Cup." And I was like, "The World Cup, it's in 2014. Okay, why am I doing this now?" That was my first lesson in events. If you're doing an event of that size, you start 2 or 3 years before it. So yeah, my very first on-site that, you know, that I traveled for ESPN was in Brazil. And after a couple of site surveys, I was there for 8 weeks managing a team of 300 to 500 ESPN employees, freelancers. It was massive, a lot of lesson learned. And I'm very fortunate that I was able to do it. Very fortunate.
Yeah. How many events do you think you did with ESPN over the years?
I think when I left, I counted my credentials and I was well over 100, but I was assigned to soccer and college football game day. So I did events almost every single week for them. Like every weekend I had an MLS game or two, or managed the season and went on site. So I was well over 100 by the time I left. And that was just the ones that I went on site for. So
yeah,
quite a few.
Yeah. And that provides context for this conversation. So you've been part of huge events and regular events with people who have egos, and there's a lot of people watching the events that you created, which is not the case for many of my guests, but it's something that we can learn from. But you've got a passion for not only what happens on camera and out there, the stuff that I talk about, the experience of the attendees. You have a passion for what's happening on the backside of the camera or in the behind the scenes. Tell us about why that became so important to you and give us a little bit more context for that.
Of course. So I was thrown into the fire, like we just said, working some of these major global events. And then I, you know, did that for a few years. Then when my husband and I moved to Utah 5 years ago, I got a job working, managing an events team for a healthcare nonprofit. And I was middle management for a major company. That wasn't my role at ESPN. So I started getting leadership training, emotional intelligence training, all that kind of, and I'm looking, I'm taking these classes and I'm like, where the heck was this 10, 14, 12 years ago when I was working with ESPN? Because if you're in events from day one, you're in a leadership role. You're managing freelancers, you're managing attendees, you're managing the vendors. But if you don't have a traditional manager role, they don't teach you these things. So I'm taking all these leadership courses, emotional intelligence, and I'm then turning around and teaching them to my team, my employees, and I'm seeing how much they benefit from flexing the relationship management muscles and how much easier it was for them to create a good experience for the attendees when they have help managing all the relationships that they're navigating on the back end. You know, if the communication is sorted on the back end, people feel that out on the floor. So I looked at my husband and I said, this is something that is missing in this industry, and I can't sit here and not tell people about it. And I'm very fortunate that, you know, managing relationships, being a people person, it's one of my superpowers. Training in it and getting actual tools and, you know, to use to manage conflict and manage relationships, I was like, even this would have helped me. So there is no way that it won't help the people around me. So I looked at him and I'm like, I want to go all in on this. And he's like, do it. Because I think it's a gap in the industry. It's something that if we can be taught how to do this stuff, every other part of the event is going to feel a little less difficult. It's still going to be difficult. It's events, but...
Yeah. And I was telling you pre-show that I literally spent 3 hours this morning analyzing the culture of the main event that I'm part of. And I got a lot of AI support in this process, but I think, and I've known this for a long time, leadership is a key to culture, the way that people interact with each other. And it's in the micro ways that we treat each other, the things that we say, the way that we interact when we're under stress, all those things add up and create a culture that the attendees feel. They can tell if you care about each other, that you love each other, or if there's like conflict and people are fighting. And I've seen all that. I've seen the griping and the gossiping happening behind the scenes, and it undermines the experience that you're trying to create. So I think this is super important. You may not be able to put dollars and cents on it, or can you? Have you found there's a way to put a return on this investment?
So they don't show up on the budget spreadsheet, like the relationship management skills, but they definitely show in the bottom line. So the way that I help my clients, or the way we look at return on investment, is less turnover on your team, returning sponsors year after year. This one's harder to quantify, but it's definitely something that you can see. The word of mouth marketing that you get from vendors and other people that you work with if you have good, strong relationships with them. So you see it in the bottom line, even if it's not a line item. There is definitely return on it. It's sometimes harder to quantify, but yeah.
Yeah, it's just like with experiences, like what I do.
Yeah. Yep.
I think retention is one of those big drivers. And how likely are you to refer this event is a great measure of word of mouth marketing. If you feel strongly that you're going to probably tell other people about this event, then, and you've seen an increase in that, then you know the things that you're doing do make a difference. So that's great.
Right.
Let's break down, what do you think are some of the key things? Give us two or three things that every team needs to pay attention to because it's either broken or could use improvement. And you've seen this kind of across the board.
Oh, I love this question. This is a good one. I'll try not to use our whole time talking about this. I could talk for hours. So the number one thing that I see that I've experienced that I have screwed up and I've seen other people is misaligned expectations. And that kind of is all encompassing. But if you aren't able to articulate what you need and what you expect from stakeholders, vendors, attendees, whoever it is, then, and you're not able to ask them the right questions to figure out what their expectations are, you're starting off failing. It's a lot of, I'm guilty of this, so I don't want to, I'm going to use it as personal rather than saying, you know, I thought I knew everything. I'm the event planner. I have the dang clipboard. I know this run of show. I know what's best. You go here, you go here. And I had that mentality for a long time. It wasn't until I started asking advice of the people that have also been doing events for years, my vendors, my volunteers. It wasn't until then, you know, asking their expectations, what they see, that we got on the same page, that everything felt a little bit easier. So it's like the misaligned expectations because of miscommunication. And then the other one is not understanding your stakeholders. So this is a big one. This is a little bit more concrete than some of the stuff I talk about.
Because I don't want you to rush ahead.
Sorry.
Misaligned expectations. To me, that's one of those things that if you don't address it before you even start creating the plan, it's hard to do on the fly. Would you agree with that?
100%. I mean, that's the way you get ahead of your conflicts. Conflicts are always going to happen, but it's minimizes exponentially if you can align expectations at the beginning from the very first conversation. But also, Phil, something you talk about too, it can't just be that first conversation. It's got to, even with your attendees, it's the same with your stakeholders. It has to be an ongoing, you have to check in, you have to do the feedback loop. So absolutely, you have to do it from the beginning all the way to the end, for sure. What,
now, give us a couple. You said, you know, you've made this mistake, but what's an area of expectations that you see often is misunderstood? Because we just assume we're on the same page. You know, we've got this general vision or whatever it might be. Where do you see that coming into conflict the most, maybe from your story?
Yeah, so with me, it was my biggest mistake that I made was thinking that I knew the best way to communicate with everyone because it was the way that I communicated. Okay. So yep. I tell this story a lot. I go back to the World Cup. I keep using that because clearly I learned a lot of lessons. But I spent months before that event, putting together a massive schedule, everybody's meal time, arrival time, blah, this whole color-coded document, sent it out the first week that we were on site. And the feedback I got was, I mean, the CEO's executive producers are like, I don't need all this information. Like, just tell me when my talent's going to arrive. The talent saying, just tell me when hair and makeup is. And then the technicians are like, well, this doesn't tell me what cams I have, where on site I'm going. And I was like, oh, this is good for me to have, so I know where everybody is, but everybody needs different information when you communicate it. I just assumed I knew the best way to communicate. And then I got to sit down and I'm like, okay, cam ops, what do you need to know every day? What does your daily schedule need to look like? Talent producers, what do they need to look like? And once I started asking their advice, open-ended questions, I had a template for each of them that I just used my massive, fabulous document, filled it in. Everybody had the information they needed. And immediately you could see that the wheels were oiled a little bit better. So it's even something as simple as that, knowing the best way to communicate with everyone. With the events that I did later on, you know, with the fundraising events, it's thinking that people understand why you're making changes. So I came into these events and I wanted to make a splash, make a name. I wanted to bring all these events that I was doing into this century. And the volunteers who have been doing it for 40 years are like, the heck are you doing? We have been really successful. We don't need all this. It wasn't until I sat down and said, tell me what your hesitations are. And I said, oh, this is why I wanted to make those changes. This is how it's going to help that they, you know, once they saw my reasoning, it was like, oh, okay, I understand why you want to make these changes. Why don't we try this, but be careful of that? So those are the two stories I can think of for me.
That's a really great example of an event that's been established a long time, how you just need to sit and listen and understand before you tinker. But the questions, that you don't always even know where the conflict's going to come up in those early days. But I think everything that you can get on the table, being as clear as you possibly can on the outcomes. That to me is the thing, is if we're clear on where we're trying to go, then if we come into conflict, we can agree, okay, we're trying to get here, right? Let's come into agreement on how we're going to solve this particular problem that maybe we see differently. So
that's the number one way to build trust, is having that common goal, having a common goal, philosophy, mentality, whatever it is. If you can establish that, that's your true north throughout everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's definitely probably never as clear as you think it is.
Ever. Right.
But that's reality. That's life. All right. You said there was a second area of conflict that you see happening that prevents this culture of, you know, unification, if you want to call it that, behind the scenes. So what's that issue?
It's the understanding your stakeholders. So this is the one I was talking about. It's a little more formal, and it's, you know, actually sitting down and mapping out your stakeholders. So the number one thing that I find with why there's high turnover on teams or why freelancers end up burning themselves out is because our default is to be everything to everyone at all times, which is great. We want to keep people happy, but you have to understand that not all of your stakeholders are the same, so their requirements aren't the same. You don't need to give the same level of attention and information to the fire marshal that you do to your lead sponsor or your gold sponsor or whatever. And our default usually is to try and be that person to everyone. So I find that when people can sit and actually take a look at, okay, who are our stakeholders? Ridiculous amount, fill up two whole whiteboards. This is everyone that we work with us in this event. Categorize them. Who requires the most attention? Who requires the most time? What type of information do they need? Don't burn yourself out giving the sponsors attendee information. They don't care and you're wasting your time. So it's like really taking the time to understand what your stakeholders need, what they require to feel valued and appreciated makes all the difference in the world. You don't have to be doing the same amount for everyone. You avoid under communicating and over communicating and burning yourself out. That's another major one that I see that I've done clearly.
Yeah. And you're hitting on another note, which is communication. I call that the water of, you know, when you're making your bread. And when you don't have enough water, then you don't have good dough. If you have too much water, then it's soupy. I made oatmeal last night and I had too much water. I had to keep adding stuff until it was edible. And, you know, we do that. Like you drown certain people and you don't provide enough to other people. So I think that's a great example of even with your attendees, but also internally, how much information, what information and where. Like not everybody reads the same places. Some people like email, others want to do it in their project management. Others want to a text, you know, whatever it might be. And so I think that's really critical. So what's the resistance to making these changes? Like, especially for events that have been around a while, what do you see happening where you've got pushback because, oh, we like the way we do things.
Well, I mean, that's everyone's pushback, isn't it? Even events that you do that have nothing to do with relationship management, it's people are like, this is working. Why would we change it? Everyone goes back to, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I mean, it could be better. Why wouldn't you want it to be? So the most resistance that I see with wanting to stand on the rooftops and shout this out and teach every event professional this is that we're people's people. So we're good with people for the most part. You know, like that's our industry. We're expected to be good under pressure. We thrive in the fast-paced environment. If you don't, you're in the wrong industry. But this is like what we're expected. So people are like, I don't need that. But you and I were talking about this. It's something that needs to continually be flexed and developed. And, you know, it's like a muscle that you need to keep working out and keep learning about, because as things change, bringing AI into the mix, trying to integrate AI into an event that's been around for 40 years, the way you talk about it, you have to learn the right way to discuss and propose these changes to the groups that you're working with. It's just like people expect because they're good at it, it's not something that they need to work on. I don't think people understand that if you do develop these skills, how much easier everything gets, how much more buy-in you get from the people you're working with. I mean, it can help your career to be good at this stuff and to continually learn. I'm still learning. I still learn every single day. I mean, I just told you I read your book twice, and your chapter about your internal team was so relevant to me talking about all the other stakeholders that you deal with. It's like, this is all one big, we're all in the same exact place, learning the same things. It's just how you apply it to different parts of the event. But that's the main resistance that I get. And no one wants any change.
Well, in the chapter you're talking about, I call crew. It's your crew, and that's just because I was doing a bunch of C words, but it's really your team and how you treat them and even how you recruit them. You know, getting the right people on the bus is, you know, I forget who said that. I think Tom Peters. You want to get the right people on the bus and get them in the right seat. That's important. But then what you're talking about is once you're there, how do you communicate
maintain it,
understand what those roles are, understand what other people's roles are and how you work together. Because being in seats on a bus, you could be in a silo and never move, never leave your seat. And that happens
trust.
A lot.
Yeah. Right? You need the trust. You can't just have the people there. They have to trust you and want to work with you for your event. It's find the true north with them. That's what it is. And then you'll have people run through walls for you, which just, it can help you tenfold, not just with retention, but how many times have you been on site at your event? Something fell through, but because you're really good at relationships, which we know you are, you can look at one of your other vendors and be like, shit, this person's not coming. This person's not coming. I need help. And they're like, I know someone down the street that can provide that for you. They're a good friend of mine. I'll call them. You don't have a backdrop? I have one back in my warehouse. I'll have someone bring it over. It's like, it's that rolling downhill that the relationships can do far more than just retention. That's how I look at it.
That's interesting. Yesterday, I was talking to a leader here in Wichita where I live who lives across the street from a golf course, happens to be the golf course where the Wichita Open took place last week. And I'm going to interview the guy who made this call down the road, but I'm going to tell you a brief story of what happened. So that event's been around 30 some years, but last Tuesday, 100-mile-an-hour winds blew through Wichita and destroyed two of the structures that they'd built and disassembled part of a third. And so they were like, and then there's, you know, trees, not branches, trees strewn all over the course. So like, and the event starts on Thursday. So they wake up Wednesday morning to this. And this lady lives across the street and sees all this. So she gets her team. She works for the, you know, the tourism bureau called Visit Wichita. She said, we're going to Crestview today. We're helping. What happened is because they've been doing this event the right way all these years, they had 50 companies who are ambassador companies. They all showed up with a volunteer force of hundreds who, you know, took care of all those branches, took care of those buildings. She had to reinvent, the person in charge had to reinvent what she was doing. But to me, that was like the power of years of building the right community, investing in the community. They were willing to show up in the hour of need, which, you know, Kansans do that. We're used to tornadoes and high winds. So we show up and help each other when something like that happens. But if you do it right, then that's where people are going to show up and help. And no one who came to that event who wasn't aware had any idea what had taken place to make sure that event started on time. But that's, I think that can happen at an event. Any comments?
100%. And the best part about that story, what stood out to me is the woman that lives across the street from you, the poor woman who was running that event didn't even have to ask. She saw it happening. And because they had that relationship, that trust, that community, she said, took the initiative to say, I'm going to go help this woman out because she's been good to us, good to our community, great to work with. I'm going to go help her. She didn't even have to ask for the help in that case. That speaks volumes about the way that she handles her relationships and her community. And God, oh, I just can imagine the stress she was feeling, but I'm really glad that she had a community that stepped up for her. I think we've all been in a similar situation. The, oh no.
Yeah. Well, it happens. I interviewed Lee Cockrell, who was COO at Disney for, I don't even know how long. And he talked about when hurricanes would blow through in Orlando and, you know, shut the park down, trees all over the place, that they had so empowered their employees. This gives me chills that they showed up the next day. They're clearing stuff out. They're giving input on how can we get the park opened as fast as we can? What can we do with the devastation that's happened here and here? It's not just a job. They actually feel like they're part of a community. And I think when you run your teams right, that's the way people feel about it. Now you do training. Like that's what you do with your company, right? So you're going in and training a company and their event team and all the stakeholders. What are some of the ways that you train?
So I love this question. I tailor it a lot to what the client needs, but mostly what I do is what we talked about, that stakeholder mapping. So a lot of the situations that I come into, it's one of two things. It's a freelancer who has a client that they're having a really hard time working with, or it's an established company who has an event team that's having trouble working with their internal teams, or they're starting a massive event and they want to start off on the right foot. They're like, you know, this is a brand new event. We want to make sure we get people on board. So I do a lot of stakeholder mapping with people, which is that what I was talking about, literally just fill up a whiteboard with all your stakeholders, map them out in a grid to determine what, you know, what, how much influence and how much power and influence they have over your event, and then use that to determine communication plans with them. So, okay, you know, these are the people that are high influence over your event. They require this type of attention. So the first time you meet with them, you're going to say, okay, you're one of, you know, in the VIP quadrant. You don't say that, but this is how I typically communicate. We usually do a weekly meeting. We have a Google Doc that you can reference if you need to talk to your state, blah, blah, blah. Does that work for you guys? And then some of your lower quadrant people, it's like, oh, okay, so the attendees only need a post, two posts a month until we get closer, and then we ramp up social media, and that's all they really need to stay informed. So it's kind of working with teams to determine where their time and energy is best used. And then a lot of conflict resolution is the other thing that I do. It's something that I know you talk about in your book too. It's emotional intelligence. It's being aware of yourself, channeling your own, you know, your own triggers, and learning how to ground yourself so that you can be aware of the people around you and de-escalate conflicts, because it doesn't matter how good you are at communicating, conflicts are going to happen in events. So how do you keep them from becoming all out drag down blowouts, you know? So those are the two types of things that I do. A lot of role playing.
So if I'm hearing you right on the conflict resolution piece, you're being brought in to mediate, or are you training them so that they have the tools to resolve their conflict, or probably some of both? I don't know.
It's a little of both. So when it's individuals, it's usually they're already in the conflict and they're, how do I deal with this client? And, you know, the scope creep is a huge thing in events. So it's like, I'm clearly, you know, I'm being taken advantage of. They're not respecting my boundaries. How do I fix that? So teaching people how to establish trust, create boundaries, all the stuff we were talking about at the beginning, like how to physically align expectations, you know, like in documents, have it in writing with some of their stakeholders. And then with the corporations, it's usually preemptive. So it's like, okay, this is, if you're in this situation, how do you do this? Or if this happens with a vendor, or I use a lot of my stories, like this happened to me with this, with one of my major sponsors not wanting to come back. They wanted the moon. I could only give them the stars. How would you handle this? So it's kind of like putting situations out there so that they can practice, so that on the fly, it's a little bit easier to have something to reference with conflict management, because there's no way to prepare for every conflict or every type of conflict. But if you understand basic conflict resolution or de-escalation techniques, then it's a lot easier in the moment. That's a long explanation. Sorry.
No, that's really good. You just raised a very interesting point. I've always thought we should do role-playing before the event, but it almost never happens. Is that your experience with most event planners, or do
100%? It was my experience with me too. That's never going to happen, or we don't know what the issue is going to be, so it feels like a waste of time. But there are, like you said, there are basic role playing situations that you can do, or, you know, it doesn't have to be as awkward as I'm making it sound right now. But there are types of conflict that you can think about and address. And then when you're on site in the moment, you have a reference point. It's never going to be exactly what you planned for, but there are we're the kings and queens of contingency plans. Why wouldn't you have that for conflict resolution and de-escalation as well? Yeah. I stand by it 100%.
But I think even if you've got this list, like we went through this whole thing one year where we created all these things that could go wrong. We said, okay, let's preemptively have a plan of how we can minimize how that's going to go wrong. And then let's identify what's our standard response going to be if it happens. And then how could we possibly go above and beyond if we have the opportunity? Because you want that white glove. If whenever you can, you want to be able to do that. So we created, I think, 20 different documents for all these different places within the event. There's no way anyone is going to remember all those things that we came up with. And that's what we concluded, is like, you know what? Let's just make this super simple. we came up with some never always statements that you probably saw in the book that simplified it and said, okay, these are our principles. We are going to use these and it should get us through the vast majority of situations that we're in. And then an individual team, like registration, they need to know their specific set of things and they can learn those because there's really just five things that could go wrong. They should know those because it's kind of like what you talked about earlier where you're sending all the information to everyone. It's like, I was overwhelmed that I created this stuff. Yes, exactly. If I'm overwhelmed, probably so everyone else is too. And we don't, he's like, oh, we can't even use this. This is too much. So I don't even know where I was going with that.
No, you're making it. It's, you have the core principles, you know where your lines are. And if you have like the tree, everybody has the tree. Okay. So if something happens, this is who's the final decision maker. This who needs to be brought in. If you know that in the moment, oh, this is a registration thing. Phil, I need you part of this conversation. If you know that and you are an emotionally intelligent person of any level, you know, you're able to listen actively, you have empathy skills, you can pretty much do anything. So it's like, if you can work on those core, your always never statements, and then have your communication plan, like the who, you can handle almost anything.
Yeah. There's some specific things that you need to know. Like we have a petty fund that's going to be able to help us solve these kinds of problems and where things are. And I think for those teams, they should actually rehearse, you know, the couple of situations and know the answers, not just read it, but actually, okay, let's make this feel practical because it's probably going to happen. Like you,
Nine times out of ten, certain things
that are going to happen. So get ready for those things. And then the wild card stuff is exactly what you described. You know, the principles, you're a human, you know how to listen and just, you know where to go if you don't know how to solve it. So I think that's really helpful. What else are you training? Like, so conflict resolution, stakeholder, I wanted to ask you about stakeholder. So you made a comment there. You like to do it preemptively, but I'm guessing a lot of times you're being brought in because it wasn't done preemptively before they started the event. And now all of a sudden they're in a mess. And so you got to kind of pull it back and start again and get everybody on the same page. How can we encourage our teams to get that conversation as early as possible? Like there's two groups of people listening to this show. Some are doing their very first event and some have been doing events for a while and they want to really upgrade it. And this is one of those places that if you pay attention to this, it could be a big upgrade. Your attendees will notice something's different and they may not be able to put their finger on it. You'll know, hey, we improved the culture because we got better at communication. We got on the same page. So I'm taking a little of your thunder away, but
no, you're saying it better than I could. So please, that's great.
Now go ahead and elaborate. So what do you do with the people who have not identified this stakeholder stuff before they start their event?
Yeah. So the way that I kind of present it to people or the way that, you know, people have found me or we've started working together, it's basically people have a budget for development, personal development, team development or something. They have all kinds of leadership skills and tools and classes and courses and people coming in. I kind of pose myself as like relationship management for events. Like this is just a developmental, it's like developmental training that you should be doing once a year, once a quarter, twice a year, whatever it is, to make sure that your team feels prepared going into an event season or after an event season so that the next one can be better. So you're right. A lot of times I'm seen as like the relationship doctor and I get pulled in when it's toxic, which is fine because that happens. But I try and get, this is what I scream from the rooftops, is if you're doing this ahead of time and you're flexing these muscles continuously and you're providing your team with emotional intelligence training. People hear that and they're like, ooh, that's all woo-woo, you know, sometimes. But if people are able to do that, it not only betters the events, but it betters them as employees. It's going to help people with their careers. So I try to get people to see it that way. And there have been a couple of people who have brought me in like, okay, we're in our, you know, Q1, everything in Q4 just ended. We have a little time. We want to do some personal development with our team or like retreats or whatever. This is what we want to work on because maybe our last event didn't go so well, or we are starting this brand new event. We want to start it off on the right foot. 9 times out of 10, it's the other way, but that's fine. It's fine because
yeah,
that happens.
EI sounds woo-woo until you're in conflict and you realize your team is toxic. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, tell me if I'm wrong. In a world of artificial intelligence, EI is the thing that's missing. Like we're going to
be
more separated from our emotions. And I know they predict someday AI is going to even be able to have emotion to it. And I listened to the, you know, the voice activation. And it sounds like there's a little emotion in there. It's like, but that's all programmed. So I think the human side of what we do at events is even more important. What would you add to that?
Yeah, you and I, I mean, we're not, we use AI for certain things to help us, you know, structure certain things. It's, you would be silly not to be embracing it a little bit, but AI is never going to be on site when you have a vendor who's very upset about where you put them, you know, on the floor. Mm-hmm. AI, or it's a long ways away, hopefully, but because that's terrifying that a robot would do that. But there is a human element to events and to managing the relationships in events that a computer can't do. People still want that connection. And people aren't going to run through a brick wall. I use that expression where if you really, you know, respect someone that you're working with or for, you'll run through a wall for them. People aren't going to do that for a robot. You know, there's like, you can't have something in common. You can't be talking about, oh, we both like dogs. We both like coffee. That's a piece that I don't think is ever going to go away. It's going to get harder and harder to find. It's also going to get harder and harder for people to practice because the digital element is taking over so many of the meetings and conversations that we would have, but they're never going to be on site handling that conflict. So you have to know how to do it. You have to.
I think we're going to see robots on site that,
that
will
scares
be
me.
Positions. But here's the fun thing. We could ask those robots to go through that brick wall for us.
There you go. I know. I'm like, there's robots at the grocery store already, Gabriella. What are you talking about? Of course there's going to be robots on the floor. But I think it's still something that people should know how to do because that'll be a ways off before they're the ones dealing with an angry vendor.
Well, and they're going to provide the logical responses in a way that, you know, you and I might get emotional about it, passionate about it, upset by it, you know, a robot's not, but in that moment, I want someone who's going to empathize with me, not tell me, here's 10 things you could do right now. You could do this, and you could do that. It's like, that doesn't feel right when you're in the middle of conflict and you don't like what's going on. So that's where the human element, I don't think will ever be replaced. I could ask AI, hey, give me in my ear 5 options of what I could be doing right now because my mind's just not able to think, or I need to focus on what this person is feeling right now. That could be a use of it someday. I don't know.
But yeah. You just said something though that triggered for me is that it's there's a negative connotation about being emotional, being passionate in a conflict situation, but those can be some of your greatest tools in those situations. Like that passion can become a shared passion and the emotion can emphasize points in a positive way. It doesn't have to be negative. And like, that's how you can get to compromise. It's how you bond and build trust with people is shared passion, shared emotion, that type of, it can be your greatest tool. And I don't know, I guess maybe yeah. Someday robots will do that, but I don't think they'll ever do it as well as we do. I hope.
And those, when you make that transition the right way, someone who's having a negative, passionate experience where they're super upset and you come in and you resolve it for them in a way that they're really happy with and you transform that, now they're going to brag. You talked about word of mouth earlier. Now they're going to brag about your event because they remember the way Gabriella came in and helped in that moment. And there's no way, I don't think, a robot's ever going to be able to help someone make that emotional change
right.
From negative to positive. Like that requires the humanity that we bring to an event. And it requires the training. frankly, that you're talking about, because most of us don't come by that naturally. There are some.
And even if you do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's hard. I mean, I'm pretty good. I still find myself getting emotional and wanting to respond. I know best. It wasn't until I started running. Let's go full circle here. It wasn't until I started running that I understood how much breathing, like literally the breathing, get, you know, three in, four out, that I have to do when I'm running, how much it can help me get back to baseline and think before I speak. And listen to understand rather than listen to, you know, like even someone who considers themselves to be good in those types of situations. I had to learn a physical tool to actually be able to do it effectively in some of the really high stress situations that I get put in on site. So if, even if you're good at it.
A friend of mine, Dr. Mark Olsey, I don't know if he's a doctor, but Mark Olsey's he's a counselor. He came up with, you know, this peacemaking device. Mostly because he was dealing with married couples who were having all kinds of conflict, but now he applies it to the workplace and all kinds of different situations. But the very first part of it is the word pledge, and the P stands for pause. It might be take a breath. It might be step away for 30 seconds. It might be step away for 30 minutes. But you need to get your temperature, your blood pressure down, get some perspective, and then come back and listen. And it's reminding me of that, like you're teaching people these principles. If you respond in that moment, I've made the mistakes and you have too, responding in the moment where it almost blows up an event. I won't tell the story here, but I did. I almost ruined an event because I responded in the moment to a situation that I was really ticked off by. And I thought I was doing the right thing. And it was the exact opposite of the right.
And it's so hard when you're in the moment too. And I've had... When I say this to people, I have the pushback, and it's, well, when you're in an event, you don't have, you know, it's mid-event. You can't step away for 5 seconds. You can't take the time to breathe because, you know, you need to be active and be in the moment. And I tell them, okay, so buy yourself time. That's when you use the power of questions. That's when you ask open-ended questions. Tell me this. What happened here? You know, like open-ended questions. Then as they're giving you their information, that's giving you more to process, and it's physically giving you time to take a step back and actually breathe without, you know, sitting there being like in someone's face, which it would help if I could do that. But that's when you ask questions. Like it, if you have to take the time, find the way to take the time. It's, you have to, you can't afford not to. As you said, I've been there too.
Questions is tell me more.
I mean, that, literally, that's all you have to say.
Simple as that. You know how we always say that's a great question to buy ourselves time to think about our answer.
I think I've done that twice today.
You probably have, and I have too. And so, tell me more is one of those things where you can do it and just be inquisitive and curious, and it's allowing you to settle down and get some context and be. You know, I think. Yeah, I think you're giving some really good advice here. Well, Gabriella, we're at the end of our time, unfortunately. Yes. I love this conversation. I think it's so important. Before we get to you sharing all your information, we have this signature sign-off that I always do where I ask you, and this is going to be easy for you because you're all about emotional intelligence, but I ask for three words that come up for you in this conversation, and at least one needs to be emotional, but in your case, all three need to be emotional. So what are the words that you think that rise up for you from this conversation today?
Oh, so, I mean, empathy has to be absolutely. One. Empathy, I think, has to be the first one. And then, all emotional. Oh, you're throwing me off here, but I like it. Okay, so empathy has to be one. I think, is honesty an emotion? I think honesty has to be one. Empathy, honesty, and then a third one that's emotional for this one. Can I make it a negative connotation one? Can I say conflict?
Absolutely. Let's do it. Conflict. I love it.
I like that one because that's come up a lot in this, and I love the way you talk about it about it.
Empathy and honesty in the midst of conflict. I think that's beautiful. All right, let's go. Well, I hope that reflected what you were hearing. That was a whole lot of fun to play. Well, Gabriella, thank you so much for being on the show. If people want to follow you, where should they find you online?
So LinkedIn is the best place. It's Gabriella Rabuccio. My name will be in the description because it's a lot of letters and a lot of vowels, so I won't expect anyone to know. But LinkedIn, definitely there for either me personally or Pro Event Tips. And then I'm Pro Event Tips on Instagram, and I'm all over both of them. And I encourage people to reach out and ask me questions. I love talking about this stuff, clearly.
And final question, if anyone sticks around till the end, this is the fun question. Your favorite Italian dish?
Oh, see, this is really hard because I've recently become gluten intolerant. But if there's one thing that I'm missing, it's a really good homemade ravioli. Sounds silly, but I have not found a good gluten-free version of ravioli. So I'm saying that. I want a hand-rolled ravioli.
So if anyone out there has a recipe for a gluten-free ravioli, send it to Gabriella or me.
And yes, I'll send it please.
For her. And if it's any good, I'll send it to her.
Yes, please. Right. Please, I would welcome it.
Well, thanks again for being on the show, everybody. Follow Gabriella and look for me on the next version of this show. Make sure you follow and comment on the show so other people can find it. That's all for today. So let's go change the world one event at a time.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmachon.com and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.